KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Soma in San Francisco.
Elmwood.
El Sobrano.
Do you live in Richmond?
Yeah.
Albany Village.
Panoramic in Berkeley.
Coming up, Governor Gavin Newsom was sworn in this week. How will he build on Jerry Brown's environmental legacy?
Jerry Brown leaves a huge legacy of climate change action on Newsom's plate, and it'll be up to Newsom to figure out how to reach all of Brown's ambitious goals.
Then we'll hear from local songwriter Anna Hilberg about her second solo record and San Francisco's art scene.
That sort of was very, very strong and began to, I don't want to say crumble because I still believe in it.
Plus, we'll hear the story behind this sound.
This is a die grinder. It's what I used to carve necks with.
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. This week, Gavin Newsom was sworn in as California's 40th governor following Jerry Brown's second 8-year tenure.
The country is watching us. The world is waiting on us. And the future depends on us. And we will seize the moment.
Governor Newsom has some big environmental shoes to fill. Governor Brown set extremely high climate change and emission goals, and he championed water and transportation projects. But Newsom also has a strong environmental track record. He introduced composting to San Francisco back when he was mayor, and he backs much of Brown's environmental legacy. But KALW's environment reporter Angela Johnston has joined us to tell us more about what we can expect in the next 4 years. Hi, Angela.
Hey, Ben.
So let's first talk about climate change. Let's talk big picture. When I think back on Brown's last term as governor, a lot of what stands out is how he fought against the Trump administration, especially when it came to climate policies.
Right. Jerry Brown committed the state to do a bunch of really ambitious things, and he's leaving a big legacy of climate change action on Newsom's plate. So it'll be up to Newsom to figure out how to reach all of Brown's ambitious goals.
No easy task.
Right. Last year, Brown signed a bill that will require California to get 100% of its electricity from clean sources by 2045. Mm-hmm. He also signed another bill that requires California to become completely carbon neutral the same year. Hmm. So those are big goals, bigger in fact than some national goals. And Newsom is left figuring out how to get the state on a path to meet them. And so he's left with the specifics. He actually told CalMatters that, quote, the next governor has to be in the how business. That means, how is he going to make all of this work?
Good question.
But he is on board with Brown's targets. In his inauguration speech, he issued similar promises to those of Brown, that California would continue to lead where the federal government is falling behind, like in climate change.
Mm-hmm. So California's come out as a leader in that area. But Brown had a lot of critics when it came to big oil interests. A lot of environmental activists were upset with him on some of the different issues that have to do with big oil. What can we expect from Newsom?
Many anti-oil activists weren't happy with Brown. When Brown spoke a few months ago at a climate change conference in Germany, protesters tried to drown him out with shouting. And activists and some environmentalists think Brown should have banned fracking in California and stopped issuing oil drilling permits. Mm-hmm. Newsom is on the record opposing fracking. Mm. He also said he would not take campaign money from oil and gas groups, while Brown was pretty unapologetic about doing so. Environmentalists also say there's a big opportunity for Newsom to address the supply side of oil production. That means cutting oil production in the state in addition to consumption. And that's something that many politicians don't bother taking up because it's often politically loaded. Groups like the Sierra Club are optimistic that Newsom will take a harder stance against oil interests, so we'll have to see what happens as the year progresses.
Right, because people's policies can often change when they get into that kind of position. So what about cap and trade? When Governor Brown was in office, that was one of his big environmental strategies.
Right, it's one of the only programs of its kind in the country. It requires companies to buy permits to offset their greenhouse gas emissions, basically a financial incentive for them to pollute less. Back in 2017, Brown signed a bill that extended the cap and trade law until 2030. But some critics and environmentalists say it actually allows companies who can afford it to pollute more, mm-hmm. and it isn't a strict enough way to curb emissions. Conservatives say it costs the state and businesses too much. So here's Newsom's stance. He wants to keep the program going. He called it vital.
Mm. So let's talk about something that was really a highly publicized issue while Brown was in office, and that is the big infrastructure projects. There's the two tunnels that he wanted to construct to carry water from the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, and then there's also high-speed rail.
Yeah, I'd say those are two of Brown's biggest legacy projects. I would think he'd hope they'd be closer to being finished by the time he left office.
Oh, sure.
But both the Twin Tunnel project and high-speed rail have run into a lot of trouble and are nowhere near completion. Mm-hmm. Brown called the Twin Tunnels project Water Fix. It would channel water from the Delta down to drier parts of the state in the Central Valley and Southern California. And Brown wanted there to be two tunnels that would do this. It's been really tough to get different water agencies on board, and it sounds like Newsom is now advocating for only one tunnel. Mm. He told the LA Times that he'd like to see a more modest proposal, but, quote, "I'm not going to walk away. Doing nothing is not an option. The status quo is not helping salmon," end quote. We'll also have to see who Newsom appoints to the water board. This person can determine the amount of water required to stay in the state's major rivers.
Mm-hmm. Well, he has a lot of appointments to make, and he just made a potentially significant one for the environment in California.
Yeah, he named Jared Blumenfeld the secretary of the California EPA. Blumenfeld previously served for 8 years as the federal EPA's regional administrator for the Pacific Southwest, and that region includes California. Before that, Blumenfeld was the director of the San Francisco Department of the Environment for 9 years. So he actually worked with Newsom back then when Newsom was mayor. And together they worked to pass a lot of progressive environmental reforms.
Mm-hmm. So let's turn our attention then to high-speed rail. How does Gavin Newsom feel about that controversial issue?
Well, he's inheriting a $77 billion project that's pretty far behind schedule and way over budget. His position on it isn't as clear as some of his other policies, but last month he took a trip to Fresno and visited some of the high-speed rail construction sites, where he called for a fresh start and more accountability. He also promised, quote, "a much more sober assessment in the next several months." So he's still on board, but less enthusiastic than Brown was.
Clearly. So maybe the biggest environmental story coming out of California, I'd say, over the last couple of years has been wildfires. What's Gavin Newsom had to say about state policy on that under his administration?
In one of his first acts as governor, Newsom announced his plans for wildfire protection and prevention in California. He called for $105 million in increased wildfire safety funding, and he said it would come on top of an already $200 million budget earmarked for forestry management. He said he wants more helicopters, more infrared cameras that could detect fires, and better alert systems. Mm-hmm. He also wants funding for mental health services for first responders.
That's important.
And in this area of fires, Newsom will also need to take a stand against Trump, because Trump just threatened to cut all FEMA spending for California fire relief.
And we'll have to see how that plays out. All right. Well, Angela, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Angela Johnston is KALW's environment reporter. You can reach her at environment@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. San Francisco-based singer-songwriter Anna Hilberg has played in countless bands over the past 20 years. In 2013, she released her first solo record. She recalls that being a more vibrant time for the San Francisco arts community. In the past 5 years, she's coped with rising anxiety over climbing rent prices while losing friends and fellow musicians to places like Los Angeles and other more stable pastures. In this edition of Bay Area Beats, Anna explains how these experiences all contributed to Really Real, her second solo record title on the Oakland-based label, California Clap.
I grew up in Los Angeles in the public school system, and when I was in the third grade, you had to pick a curriculum, an extracurricular activity, and you could either do wood shop, the choir, or be in band, and I chose band. For some reason, really took to the trumpet. It affected my life because I was never really good at anything else in school. I never really had anything that like made me feel confident or made me feel like I was really good at it. So I got really lucky. It helped me get through school and kind of helped me become an adult and meet all of my artist friends. And that's kind of how I meet people, is through music. So it's everything.
Ain't got nothing left to do. I'll do it anyway.
seeing an art scene that sort of was very, very strong when the first album came out and began to, I don't want to say crumble because I still believe in it. There was a lot of, I honestly would probably say trauma. Losing a lot of your friends, having fear of where you're gonna live. Feeling like you're doing your art, but there's not anybody there that cares, or that there's not a support network, which is really important. I try to find the positives in things like that. You can like take away my home and take away all my friends and take away like everything that you want, but I still have like myself and my mind and my own time. I spent a lot of time processing my emotions of everything because I think for a while I was like on heavy survival mode. True love, tie me up and blind me. I've been thinking about it all of this time, and I've been acting like we're catching on fire. I have rock songs, I have songs that are kind of country, I write a lot of ballads, and a lot of my songs are kind of like adult lullabies to myself, just a reminder of letting things go and letting things breathe. Let it go. There's a lot of brass and harmonies and a lot of beautiful female voices, and it is difficult to describe. I would say I get categorized as pop a lot, but it's a little bit more than that. So the name of the album, it's Anna Hilberg, Really Real, and Really Real is a song that's on the record. It's basically a song about whether anything was ever really real, whether that thing that I had held on to, whether it be like a community or a relationship or anything, like, was it ever really real? Was it ever really real? And all the nevers, well, they are. That is a big question. What is really real? It changes from time to time. Your reality is constantly changing. So your ability to be flexible with that and to find your grounding, whether it's in art or anything that you believe in, is kind of what you have to hang on to. To be a songwriter is to just constantly be searching for the perfect song and seeing the different secrets that you can unlock. I believe that it's sort of a craft that we kind of all have, like whether you're like singing in the shower or making things up, or you're in a band or you're a little kid. And a lot of people, I feel, can write music, but it's a little bit mysterious to most people, and it's difficult. I stay here because I have rent control. But I also stay here because I know it sounds cheesy, but I think it's important. LA doesn't need any more artists. New York doesn't need any more artists. I could just leave it to go somewhere better where things are like happening or whatever. It's my home. I've lived here for 20 years. I feel like a sense of responsibility to still make things and to still keep something alive that I care about, pretty much. But also rent control.
That was musician Anna Hilberg. You can catch her performing live tomorrow night at the Uptown Nightclub in Oakland. That piece was produced by Trick Wynn.
And all those Minnesota nights, and all that cold. But I got hotter in the light that time before.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hanna Baba. Now, Truk is going to help us make something old new again. It's the return of Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. It's the sounds that define the Bay Area. We used to hear them every Thursday, and we're bringing them back this year on our show. Let's hear today's. When Metallica, the Rolling Stones, or other big rock bands are in the Bay Area, and they need their guitars fixed, there's a good chance you could find them at 15 Lafayette Street in San Francisco. That's where you'll find a constellation of five shops crammed into one building, the oldest of which has been running for more than 30 years. So when Truk, who's one of our resident music lovers, found out about it, she had to check out the little alley filled with big sounds.
I'm standing in front of 15 Lafayette Street with Jesse Cobb, who basically grew up here.
It's a very nondescript building on a rather isolated, dirty street.
Jesse's dad, Chris Cobb, owns a part of this little guitar kingdom. Go in.
And the first thing you walk into is real guitars.
It's the oldest vintage guitar shop in the city, opened since February 1986. Jammed with instruments made decades ago, it's got so much character, Woody Allen filmed a scene from Blue Jasmine here.
You know, we need a bigger space, but it just wouldn't be right if we moved anywhere else but where we are.
Cobb says it's the kind of shop he went to as a teenager in the 70s. We maneuver past stacks of amplifiers. Cobb picks up an acoustic guitar called the National Tricone.
It's an acoustic guitar, but one of the big differences is the body is completely made of metal, you know, and it has these little cones in it that are called resonators, and they make it loud. There's like no amplifier, and I'm not going to play anything right now, but...
Back before amplification, the resonator guitar was used to cut through the rest of the band.
So these Delta Blues guys got a hold of these guitars, and then they'd use something like a glass or metal slide, and they found you could get this.
You'll pay $2,200 for the 17-year-old metal resonator. Next, Cobb shows me a Les Paul SG made nearly 60 years ago.
Basically, you're paying a whole lot of money to buy wood from 1961 because just about everything's been replaced on it. But you can't get anything like that anymore. The wood supply in the world is just not that way.
The shop is full of music history lessons. Celebrities like Carlos Santana come in and know they can keep a low profile, but it's also a place for newcomers.
I'm Mason Mejia. I'm 19 years old. I got a 1965 Epiphone Cortez. And it's the Sunburst version. And this guitar is 1 year younger than my dad, which is pretty gnarly.
Would you mind playing it a little bit for us?
Yeah, 100%.
Mejia found the place by accident on his way to one of the larger corporate shops in town. Real Guitar's co-owner, Ben Levin, says unlike other shops, this place is like a community center.
People just come by and talk politics and movies and TV with us and just hang out.
cruise past the guitars, a few basses and ukuleles, and you'll find the Gary Brower Repair Shop. Famous musicians trust the people back here to modify and repair their instruments. And some folks working behind the counters are also celebrities themselves. Fernie Rod of the glam rock metal band Jet Boy is just one of them.
And that was the riff for Feel the Shake.
Could you tell me what you do here?
Well, when they let me out of my cell, I work here at Gary Brower's, the shop manager. And what we do is we make sure that guitars are fixed and basses are fixed so people can go out and make music and have fun.
The five businesses here complement one another. Brower himself takes me back into the guitar building area.
This is Dan Ransom. He's been here for 30 years with us. He builds guitars. What I like to say is people show up with a napkin with a drawing on it and go, here, make this.
So this is a die grinder. It's what I used to carve necks with. This is the throatier, put it in musical terms, hand sander. And most of the people I've built for old school San Franciscan bands, Airplane, The Dead, Joe Satriani, not so old school. I build mainly for just local guys.
How long does it take to build a custom guitar?
Secret. Yes, that's a secret.
Way too long. Where if you actually took the hours and the amount of money you were getting paid, I'm pretty sure you'd be really depressed and find another job.
What does keep Brower from finding another job then? Satisfaction. Nights backstage with the Rolling Stones and days like this.
One day, Willie Nelson's guitar, the acoustic guitar with the big hole in it, appeared here for him to work on. That's the kind of reputation he has. And funny thing about Willie's guitar is, if you look at it, it's got all these names carved into it. And before we saw the guitar, we thought they were like Merle Haggard and, you know, all these great, Conway Twitty and all these great. And it was literally, the names were like Ed, Dave, and it's the names of his roadies and his buddies and just the guys he hangs with. He has a car. And I love that part. I thought that was so funny.
Like Willie's roadies, these are the people who work offstage to help musicians get the sound they want out of their instruments. Ransom walks me out of the building area, back into real guitars. He says there's nothing quite like the sound of a music store.
There's no orchestration to it. It's like three or four people playing all kinds of different stuff, and it almost never blends together, and you just don't find that in music anywhere else.
In San Francisco, I'm True Gwynn for Cross Currents.
Oh, really?
That story originally aired in December 2017.
Well, that isn't that like where the outlaw country movement started?
Right now, we're listening to Kokomo Hum from San Francisco. They're playing at the Elbow Room in Oakland's Jack London Square tomorrow night. And your players today include Sarah Nora Coast, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Porfirio Rangel, Lisa Wang, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Kristen McCandless, with help from Shireen Adel. Our managing editor is David Boyer, and deputy news director is Angela Johnston. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. We're out until Monday, but if you missed anything this week, you'll find it in our weekly newsletter. Subscribe at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. It's free, it's easy, and it makes it easy to stay up on the Bay Area. Thanks for listening. I'm Ben Trefney.